once we get them onto punk, we can get them onto maybe
Elvis Juice, or Easy Jane, or
something lighter, Dead Pony as well.
Yeah, so I had to use
these. Yeah, everybody likes a Dead Pony, right?
Yeah.
What's up, guys? This is Zach, and you've just stepped into the dark blue. And today I'm super excited because I am here in Dublin, Ireland, hanging out with some guys at the Brewdog Outpost in Dublin here. And it's pretty amazing. They're two of the managers at the Brewdog Outpost. If you guys ever had a Brewdog beer, then you know why it's so great. If you've never had Brewdog, then you need to seek it out. Try one. It's pretty phenomenal stuff. So, you guys go ahead and tell them who you are.
My name is Dara, and I am the beer school specialist. I've been working Brewdog. I've been working for them since November, and I'm absolutely loving it.
Awesome.
My name is Paul, deputy general manager here. Started with Brewdog in September, specifically for here, but I did 7 weeks training in the UK with Tower Hill, Lothian Road, Aberdeen Castlegate, Aberdeen Flagship, Dogtap. So did a lot of traveling in within 7 weeks.
That's quite a resume, man.
I thought within 7 weeks as well. So a lot of transport, a lot of angry fiance texts and calls. Yeah. We managed to get back here in November for training with the full team guys here, and then we opened 12th of December for a soft opening with our EFBs, which we'll talk about later on, and then officially opened on Friday the 13th. So
yeah, you got another Friday the 13th coming up here pretty soon. So
we gotta do something for that, mark the event. It's been pretty hectic 3 months nearly. New to the day.
Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Well, you guys have done a lot here. It looks beautiful. So, yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. And cheers.
Cheers.
Sláinte.
Sláinte. Yes.
Damn, it's good beer.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. These guys are going to know a lot more about this beer than I am. But this is the Brewdog flagship IPA. It's called Punk IPA, mm-hmm. and it's just a really wonderful, well-balanced IPA. And I'm gonna let Dara tell us a little bit more about it.
So this is our flagship Punk IPA. This was the very first beer that James Watt and Martin Dickey started back with the company back in 2007. It's a phenomenal beer. It was my very first craft beer when I drank about 5 years ago. It's about all of half of Brewdog sales, actually, so that a lot of people drink it within it's a huge amount with cans and bottles, and I just see kegs everywhere. Every Irish pub's trying to get at least a Punk IPA into them and stuff like that to see people and try it. It's got 6 different hops in it, if you want to know. So it's got Cascade, Simcoe, Nelson, Anthem, Amarillo, Chinook, that was the last one there.
Nice.
And it's just a really well-balanced beer. It's really good.
Yeah, it really is. It doesn't have that bitter finish that a lot of IPAs have.
Nope.
Which is a lot of the reason, like, often I'll avoid an IPA because I don't like that bitter finish on the back of my tongue.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Like me, yeah.
But these more well-balanced ones, mm-hmm. that have a little bit of the more of the, like, fruity flavors in the front end, that kind of thing, that I really enjoy. So,
yeah.
It's cool.
The recipe has changed slightly from when it first came out, because I do remember that kind of originally having Punk in 2013, I think it was.
Yeah.
It had a higher IBU, which made it a higher bitterness level.
Yeah.
But since then, they kind of tweaked it. Because the way Brewdog work is that they want to appeal to the masses and not just a core people who just drink craft beer.
Yeah.
So if you tweak a little bit, not change on off amount, but just bring the IBU a little bit down, it means the masses can drink it. We're here to convert the masses into drinking craft beer.
As we should be.
Yes. Quality beer.
We're over here getting our... There's the paparazzi over here. Hi. Another one of the Brewdog team there. taking some pictures.
That's Eliana. She's our sales and events coordinator. She came with, she joined us middle of January, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the difference she makes is unbelievable. Like, our numbers go up. Like, ever since she's came on, our sales have just gone up, our events have gone up, our social media has been out of this world. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. Cool. Yeah, it takes a pretty big team to run a place like this.
We're about 4 times bigger than the average BrewDog bar in the UK.
Okay.
So we've got a lot on our plate, and I think we're handling pretty well at the moment.
Yeah, so, like, not to go into too much numbers, but, like, we're blowing our budget way over, like as in they gave us our budget of what we should be making every week, and we've just, like, gone
killing it.
Yeah. Which is obviously great, but it also took a slight toll during Christmas when we were just, like, twice as busy, and we didn't really expect it. And in fairness to all the guys, everyone who started back in November, they're all still here.
Yeah.
And, like, those 3 or 4 weeks was just manic. And we the people we've hired since have been unbelievable. They've just, like, gelled as if everyone knew each other already.
Yeah.
And again, like, just, it's, when we talk about community and business, it's not just community for the people out here and in the offices and the thing. It's community inside as well. But, like, everyone here gets on with everyone.
Yeah, friends. That's so great.
Everyone meets outside of work. It's encouraged that you guys come, that the staff here come to the bar on their days off to enjoy the beer, and not to work. Like, the last thing I want for anyone coming into work is, like,
work. Yeah, I know.
And everyone comes in like, work, excellent.
Yeah.
Even on Friday when everyone knows by midnight you're gonna be like
dead.
So, like, it's just encouraged. So, like, we bring everyone in, and it was just, it's like I see different people hanging out with different people, like different guys, like, it's like, oh, they're friends. Wouldn't have put those two together, but, like, everyone's just,
that's exciting.
Yeah.
It's such a refreshing perspective on things, because it's like, you know, I come from a big company where everyone who works is just a number. Mm-hmm. You know, you come in, you do your productivity, you get out, and that's it. You know,
and everybody's Monday to Friday,
right?
Yeah.
And people are looking forward to the weekend so they can just go get drunk and forget about work for a little while.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
But this is really great, because, you know, encouraging the community between the employees and the staff and the patrons too, because everyone's so nice to people here when they walk in. You know, which I really appreciate. And that's what BrewDog's kind of thing is, right? Is beer for the people, yeah. Right? Is that kind of the idea behind the whole?
Oh yeah, it's just for as times have changed over Ireland. It's just that we're trying to push forward good quality beer, where it's at the best quality that we can do. It's at the right temperature. You know, the lines are cleaned every once a week. You know, people, when they take their first sip of the beer, it's just an amazing experience.
Yeah,
and especially after a hard day at work. You know, when you're doing a 9-to-5 job, and you just don't want to think about work anymore. You want to go to BrewDog, have a pint of Punk, and sit down, have some good food, and just relax, and then just enjoy the company that you're with the people with.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Well, yeah, so guys, we got a special treat here, because Dara does a beer school here. Mm-hmm. And so these guys are actually going to tell us a little bit more about their beers and about the different styles of beer and how they're made and why they work and all that.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a few minutes to talk about that. And where do you want to start?
I'll just start that I do beer schools here in the Dublin Outpost. I was the first one to do it on a very short notice. I had 40 minutes to an hour just beforehand. It was only with 2 customers, and I enjoyed the experience. Lovely. It was really nice. How I do about beer school, it's a 2-hour class with me, and I've trained I've trained 3 other people as well. We're hoping to do beer school in Spanish as well, so that'll be really fun. How it goes about, it's a 2-hour class with me, and you're given a brewery tour of how beer is made and the ingredients in beer. Then I bring you back into the little schoolroom that we have downstairs, and we go through some malts, we go through some hops and smell them, tell you about the history of BrewDog and the history of beer and how it came about. And then I bring some tasters, and I actually do some cheese pairings with them as well.
Oh, cool.
So you didn't think beer and cheese would go so well hand in hand, but actually it does. The fatty acids of the cheese actually go really well with the carbonation of beer.
Oh, wow.
And it goes, cool. Yeah, it goes really good with pairings. And then shows you some funny videos, tell you some funny stories about BrewDog. and kind of just go through the different styles of beer, because a lot of people, when they just think of beer, they just see either an IPA or a lager or like a stout or a porter in that sense.
Okay.
Whereas there is up to, I want to say, I think there's 160 different styles.
There's a new beer. There's a new beer style coming out every week. Like brewed IPAs weren't a thing a couple of years ago. Now all of a sudden, every brewery is doing a brewed IPA.
Yeah, which is confusing for me because I'm just thinking that's a type of, you know, bubbly wine. So
yeah, it's going to have that dry finish where you're going to kind of combine the two, and that's a new style.
Yeah.
You know, even New England IPAs, the real hazy, crazy ones, only started back in, I'd say, 2003.
Yeah.
In, actually, in Vermont by, who's the
Heady, The Alchemist.
The Alchemist.
They came out. Called Heady Topper.
Yeah.
You got to find it. Yeah. You won't find it anywhere outside Vermont. But,
no, you won't. Yeah.
Got it. I'll have to take a look.
Yeah.
I'll just stop in Vermont.
maple syrup and some Heady Topper.
That sounds like a good breakfast beer then, yeah? Some pancakes and maple syrup.
And there's like, there is becoming breakfast stouts. There are breakfast stouts that are becoming a style, and it's just crazy.
I've had a few of those in my time, for sure. Yeah. So there's actually one down in Fort Worth, Texas. They actually brew, their breakfast stout is actually brewed with cereal.
So, really?
Yeah, they throw cereal in the tank with everything else and brew their breakfast stout.
I've had
stout,
a blueberry waffle stuff.
Oh yeah, see where I had a donut.
That's an Omnifollow.
Well. Yeah.
No, that was by Vocation Brewing.
Vocation?
No. Yeah, in England. So they did that one, and you just got a load of blueberry with it. It was really nice, actually. But like again, I said, go through different styles of beer, explain how they're brewed differently, and what makes them different in that sense.
Cool.
And just have a generally kick-ass time, you know?
Yeah. Can you guys tell us a little bit about the different styles of beer, or at least a few styles? So if you maybe choose a few of the main...
Pick the four that we do in beer school. So the four we do in beer school is we do Punk IPA, which you're drinking right here.
Mm-hmm.
We do Jet Black Heart, which is our nitro stout.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a headline beer anywhere in the other Brewdog bars except for Dublin.
Okay.
Because Dublin and Guinness have such an affiliation.
Nice.
You can't get away with not having a
similar
style.
Yeah.
Now, in my opinion, Jet Black Heart's better than Guinness. And some people will crucify me with that.
As an Irishman?
It's just my opinion. So you could not have it. So it's always on. We always have it.
Okay. I'll have to try that today before I leave then.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I love nitro stouts too. So
yeah, so it's perfect. We do Indie Pale Ale. Actually, it might be changing soon. We're not too sure.
Mm-hmm.
We just released Brewdog Pale Ale, so it might be taken over as a core beer. And then we also do Lost Lager.
Yes.
Which again, you can't have a bar of this size
without a lager
with these kind of clientele and not have a crisp, clean, easy drinking, but like flavorsome lager.
Yeah.
You go most bars, you'll find lagers that are the mass produced
like Coors. Nothing against Coors. You like Coors. Okay.
It just tastes like rice and maize and corn. It's just
Yeah. A lot of those ones to me just taste like soggy bread.
Yep.
That's kind of not a fan. So
if you get a chance to try the Lost Lager, it's a beautifully dry hopped Pilsner style lager. So.
Good deal.
Yeah, so they're the main four. I'll let Derek talk a bit more about the style and how each style.
So with beer as a family, you could say, there's two major different styles. You got lagers and you got ales. Stouts and porters are in ales as well. So you got your pale ales, your IPAs and stuff like that in your ales. And then lagers, everyone knows more or less like the American light lager that everyone drinks around the world.
Yep. Sorry for all the background noise, guys. Yeah. The staff's having a lot of fun.
They are actually.
Yeah. But, you know, lagers started back about only 400 years ago, so they're not that old. They're quite young, actually. And it was just down to the beer being fermented in cold cellars and in caves. And over time, the yeast would get adapted to that cold weather, that cold temperature, and create its own strain. And that's where they would be fermented for about 3 or 4 times longer than ales.
Interesting.
And that's how you get a really crisp, clean lager, because you don't want any of that funky flavor. You don't want any haze. You know, you don't want any sediment at the end of some beers that you get sometimes from Belgium styles. So it's just a phenomenal beer, and especially during the summertime.
Yeah.
When it's roasting hot
outside,
the It's just what you want.
You don't want water.
No, you don't want water. But a lot of people forget that they think of the American light lager, and there's a lot of different styles. You got double box, which are really strong lagers that are really deep in color. They almost look like a red ale or even darker than that. You got Eisenbox, normal and other box. I'm trying to think. I just think of box.
Smoked Marsden would be one that people forget about. It actually, it sounds horrible. It tastes like bacon.
Yes.
It tastes like bacon.
Really crispy, fat on the bacon, real crisp. That, it sounds like something you don't want to drink.
Yeah.
Trust me, just taste it and just try and seek one out. There's a most popular one called, I'm going to butcher this name, Schlenkerland. Schlenkerland.
Yeah. And it's got kind of like a smoky flavor.
Real smoky.
Yeah. Smokes. I get smokes. When I tried it for the first time, I did a video actually on it of me trying it, and I smelled smoked salmon and smoked bacon straight away.
Okay.
From it. It was phenomenal. Nice. It was such That's a weird experience, but it was phenomenal.
It still falls under the lager
category.
Bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
So you got your lagers and then you got your ales, which are
everything else.
Everything else. you got a sub another category in that sense. You got mixed fermented beers. Which are kind of take a combination of, say, ferment at a warmer temperature, but might ferment at a longer period of time, or vice versa in that sense, with cold temperature in a shorter period of time.
Okay.
Or even have, instead of adding your yeast to the beer, you would actually have these massive beds of vats where the yeast would just come in and normally just kind of eat the sugar and create funky flavors.
Okay.
That's a lot of Belgium style beers, isn't that way? You get higher percentage because you're not, sometimes you get higher or lower because you're not in control of how it's actually fermenting at that time.
Got it. Okay. Is that a temperature? It's a temperature-based thing, or is that like a volume kind of thing?
It's really hard to like. It's like spontaneously fermented, so it does go by temperature, but you're not putting it into a high temperature room or a low temperature room. You're letting the actual room temperature work its magic.
Got it.
Obviously, if you're doing it in the winter months, it'll take longer or quicker. And then in the summertime it'll be different as well. So it's all about it takes in all the natural elements.
Okay.
It's bizarre, but it makes some real fabulous
beers. So how does the process then vary from creating like an IPA, like creating the Punk IPA or stout?
In that sense, well, with stouts, down to ales, then an ale would normally take anywhere from 7 to 10 days to ferment, and then you kind of condition in that sense to make sure that all of the off flavors that you don't want in that beer are gone in that sense.
Okay.
And you're doing it anywhere from 14 to 23 degrees. Now you're from the States and you guys would use Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to think of Fahrenheit terms.
Just Google it.
Yeah, probably just Google it. And then lagers will take 3 weeks, up to 3 weeks to do that, and then you have to condition that, and that would be between 7 to 10 degrees. So a lot colder. The difference is you're kind of letting Mother Nature take its course in that sense.
Yeah.
Again, like what Paul was saying, you know, colder weather, you would take a lot longer. In summer weather, it would take a lot shorter. In some beers, they would even take three different batches of the same beer and then might blend them together, because the first batch might be real kind of sour, the second might be real kind of funky flavor, and the third might be just up the wazoo, and you put the game together, and you actually have a guy who called a master blender who will put the three together.
Oh, cool.
And you get a style called a goose.
Okay.
Goose. Yeah. From Belgium. And they're just, you, when you drink it first, if you're not, you only drink American light lagers or the Guinness and stuff like that, and you drink this and you're like, that's not a beer. But people just don't know. They haven't been exposed.
It almost tastes like a blend between a cider and a beer.
Almost,
because they're sour. And
and you get that real sweet flavor sometimes as well.
Yeah. Ciders in the US tend to be, you have a much more drastic contrast between sweet and dry ciders.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually tried a dry cider here since I've been in Dublin, and it was still extremely sweet compared to a dry cider that I would get in the US, which is actually more like a dry white wine.
You can get the super dry ciders here. The Irish have had the same palate for so many years that if you throw something like, that's why the craft beer market in Ireland is 2.5%, not even actually, it's like 2.3%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because all they know is Guinness, and they know for the majority of it, Heineken.
Yeah.
It's their only things they drink. And then their cider, the majority, the biggest selling cider for so long was Bulmers. And that's an extremely sweet
cider. Very sweet.
Yeah. In recent times, a Heineken product called Orchard Thieves kind of changed the market. But again, it's just a super sweet cider.
Okay.
I found that they've even gone sweeter with Appleman's and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you have to search out the dry cider.
Got it.
You won't find it on draft anywhere. You'll find it in bottle shops.
Yeah.
Same reason. You'll find certain craft. You'll find a certain degree of craft beer in the old school bars in town, but majority you'll have to search for a specialist bar to sell.
Yeah, I've had to look for the pubs that literally legitimately say craft beer on them.
Sometimes that's still misleading.
That is very misleading. As I see craft beer, I'm like, oh, pop in. You know, I've never been to this bar because there's about 600 bars in Dublin alone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I pop in and I just see what they would have on tap. They would have either, I think, Carlsberg Pilsner or Unfiltered, something like that.
Ooh,
Unfiltered. And I was like, is that your craft beer? And they're like, yeah. And you're like, all right. And I'll just walk out.
Yeah.
Nice try.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to change here. So when we opened, we were kind of saying to ourselves, okay, we're not really, we can't just aim for that 2.5% because there's no point in us doing that, especially with the size of this bar.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So let's go for the 97.5% market. And that's the majority of the people who work in these kind of offices who just have all they know is when they drink, what they think is premium is Peroni, Birra Moretti, even Heineken. Like they think that's a premium product, whereas premium product is beer that's made properly, not properly, because the other beers are made properly, but they're made with a certain degree of flavor,
care. Yeah, for sure.
And quality ingredients.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, that's what we're trying to change here. We're trying to change these guys' opinion of craft beer.
That's awesome.
Into premium beer, and we can see that. So every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, it's punk. It's just the number one selling.
Yeah,
by far.
Just coming. I thought it would have been a lager, but now people will go for punk. Cause
And
once we get them on the punk, we can get them onto maybe Elvis juice, or Easy Jane,
or something lighter. Dead Pony as well.
Yeah. So I had these two.
Yeah. Everybody likes a Dead Pony, right?
Yeah. I had these two guys sitting in the bar for.
The sarcasm, by the way. Don't take that out of context. You know?
At least it's tone.
So let me just take a second to say, I am wearing this new Sheath gear and I'm freaking loving it. We're working with some friends at Sheath Underwear, and for you guys who haven't heard of it, it's like upgrading from a studio apartment to a two-bedroom for your junk. There's no rubbing, there's no chafing, and I refuse to wear anything else.
I'm wearing some right now. I've got a Sheath hat on. They have more than just underwear, and I basically switched out my entire wardrobe of underwear for these Sheath ones. They're amazing.
Yeah. Go to sheathunderwear.com and use the promo code DARKBLUE, all caps DARKBLUE, and get 25% off your first order. That's a big deal, guys. Like, seriously.
It is. It's awesome.
I had two guys sitting in the bar and they were drinking Lost Lager for 4 or 5 hours. And they were getting towards the end and they were, I was convinced I wanted to change to drink something else.
Yeah.
So I got them onto Paradox Islay.
Okay.
No way.
Paradox is actually the first ever beer that James Watt and Martin Dickey brewed.
Okay.
but not commercially. They brewed it in their mom's, James Watt's mom's.
Oh, that was a homebrew?
Yeah.
It was a homebrew, and they gave it to a guy called Michael Jackson. Not the Michael Jackson.
No.
Different Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And he was the one who told them, quit your job and start brewing beer.
Awesome.
Yeah. This particular Paradox was barrel-aged Islay whiskey cask, so it's got that.
Wow.
PD smoke.
You have that right now?
No.
Unfortunately. I know.
You're teasing me.
You have to come back again, man.
You know, I guess so.
So I got them drinking that, and they were blown. They were just like, how is this? This is like so different.
Yeah.
They came back the following week and asked for something not Lost Lager. They went for another stout. They went for
good.
zombie cake, which is our praline.
That's all it takes. So. Actually, guys, I have that here right as well. I had already poured this before we started the recording, and so now I have two beers at the moment.
Double fisting,
yeah. So, but anyway, so is there any more you'd like to talk about just creating the different styles of beer? Anything else you'd like to say about how that process goes?
I'm still learning as it goes. In BrewDog, every server or waiter or waitress will have to do an exam.
Okay.
Called the Certified Beer Server Exam, where it's a 60 questions, all multiple choice, in 30 minutes. And it breaks down to more or less about, I think, 40% of the courses for different styles and stuff like that you have to learn. You have to learn about around 40 styles.
Yeah.
You have to learn about storage, like how keeping beer at temperatures and pouring them and glass, cleaning, all that kind of stuff. And then even with understand alcohol and how it actually impacts you as a person, where you kind of take it in and everything like that. So there's a lot of history and the history of beers in that sense. So we have to do that. I was the first person to do the exam in here, passed. I was very happy. And I'm studying for my level 2 certified Cicerone. And cool. the guy who actually started the whole program back in 2008 was a guy called Ray Daniels.
Yeah.
From the States. And there's 4 levels. And I believe this is the right number. There's less than 16 people in the world that are a master Cicerone, which is a level 4, which is the highest you can get there.
And what is it? What is a Cicerone?
A Cicerone is the equivalent to a wine sommelier or to a whiskey connoisseur, and someone who has a good in-depth of serving beer, the different styles, the different glasses that certain styles have to be in.
Yeah.
You know, and also a bit of food pairing with the beers as well, and how they can contrast and compare and actually go really hand in hand together. So I'm studying for that.
Cool. I mean, guys, there's a whole world when it comes to beer, and I know a lot of us grew up with the simple, you know, like the lagers, Budweisers, Coors Lights, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, a big part of our purpose here with Into the Dark Blue is to help you guys learn about beer and to help you guys learn about like how you can really enjoy it and not just drink it to get drunk, because that's not our purpose. You know, we're trying to learn about beer so we can appreciate it a little bit more, and maybe just drink one or two that we really appreciate, one or two that we really enjoy, for specific reasons, rather than just buying a 24 pack after a hard week at work and slamming them all.
I used to do that.
we all started drinking, we probably all used to do that. I used to do that as well.
Yeah.
I lived in Cape Cod for 9 months.
Yeah,
I'm working placement for
I'm sorry.
For college.
Yeah, I'm kidding. Okay. I've never been to Cape Cod.
I just remember picking up 30 cases of Busch Light for $14, and crushed down in one night.
30 beers for $14. That'll tell you something. Right,
that'll tell you about the quality.
I grew up on Dutch Gold.
Yeah.
Or a Tesco Lager, and I still remember you get a 4-pack for €2.64.
Okay.
So that's how cheap it was, but the percentage was only around 3.5 or 3.8 or something like that.
Yeah.
And you just buy maybe
like 4 of them.
Four, 16 cans, and it'll get you there, you know. But I've seen over the last 10 years the craft beer revolution in Ireland has really grown. I did a thesis actually on this. And
it's pretty phenomenal, guys. He showed it to me earlier, and it's impressive. It's a lot of really great information.
I gave you the history. 100 years ago, there's about almost 14,000 pubs in Ireland.
Yeah.
Now there's only less than half of that now. Like I said earlier on, there's about 600 pubs in the greater Dublin area in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last 10 years, especially with the recession that we had back in 2008, where people are starting to get their jobs back and getting better money and higher standard of living, they're like, I'll go for that beer that costs a bit more. I'll try it and I'll like it. And I found that people will expand their palates more when they have that extra bit of cash. And, you know, I found that people still go on the sesh, as we would say in Ireland, and binge drink Friday or Saturday night. But I found that people will go for one or two Monday to Thursday, have a couple, maybe just with friends, and just enjoy the experience and enjoy a beer for the quality it is and not for the effect.
Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
It's brilliant. Back in 2012, craft beer production was going, but then from 2012 to 2017, craft beer production went up by 475%.
Wow.
It went up a huge amount.
That's pretty impressive. Yep.
It was ridiculous.
So I want to take this a little bit. I would love to talk to you guys a little bit about growing up in Dublin. Right. So I know aside from the craft beer industry, you guys have seen a lot of changes in Dublin over the years. I've learned a little bit about the history and how recent it is that a lot of more progressive things are happening in Dublin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to talk to you guys a little bit about kind of, you know, growing up here and the idea, the concept of masculinity in Dublin and how it impacted growing up for you guys.
Yeah. I let you go first.
it has changed quite a bit. I remember just growing up, I went to an all boys primary school and an all boys secondary school. So like the idea of masculinity has always that's 18 years of my life. So
yeah,
and I played rugby as well, which is back like in early 2000s, whatever, was always seen as a very masculine game, obviously, but which like it's, now it's kind of changing a little bit. The Irish women's rugby team is getting more and more notoriety.
Okay.
So it's not like it'll take a while. It's probably still seen as a man's sport, but it's getting there. It's changing a little bit.
Yeah. So how would you say for you growing up that like was there a specific idea of masculinity growing up that you kind of felt like you had to uphold in Ireland and specifically with all of the more conservative
views? So it's always you're always seen as the man of the house. Like when I was born in 1990, my mother quit her job, so she was like the housewife. My dad was the banker, and like for the first 18-20 years of my life, that's what I thought. No, sorry, 15-16 years, that's what I thought it always was.
Yeah.
And then my sister, who would be a little bit older than me, she got married in 2007, and she has 4 kids now, and like so she still works 5
okay.
days a week, and
yeah,
her husband works 5 days a week, so it's like we're quick, like you said earlier on, we're progressing quite a bit, but it took a long time to get there. We've only just passed an abortion bill.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We only just passed gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like divorce was only made legal in the mid 90s.
1996, I think.
96.
Yeah.
Like
wow.
Contraception was only made legal in 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
It's like back in, like, it took so long to kind of progress. But
wow.
Like, for me growing up, I didn't know much different until, like, the abortion referendum I can't remember if it was the abortion referendum or if it was the gay marriage referendum. That was, like, 2 or 3 years ago, and I had the highest turnout of voting in the history of Ireland.
Really?
Okay, even more than our vote for general elections,
yeah,
like that. This was the biggest one. Mm-hmm. Because more and more young people are voting now.
Yeah.
So, as a nation, we are progressing.
That's cool.
Quick now, but it took a while for us to get there.
Yeah.
And from my understanding is that when I grew up, so he went to an all boys primary and secondary school. I went to boys and girls primary and secondary school. So I had that kind of difference between him.
Yeah.
And I grew up on the south side of Dublin, and there's a lot of secondary schools who are very orientated with rugby and all kind of lads and boys in that kind of sense. And if you didn't play rugby, you weren't considered one of the main guys of the group in that school or that year when you're anywhere from the ages of 13, 14, 16, all the way up to 18.
Yeah.
I think when my parents were trying to send me off to secondary school, they thought, you know, I had an interview for an all boys school. Thank God I didn't get in. I'm actually kind of really happy because I grew up in a school that was mixed. It was boys and girls, and it was smaller classes. And it gave us the understanding to work side by side, to understand and to, you know, if we had any problems that we could talk about them and just get to know how other people react, how other people kind of interact with each other, and if there's any problems that we could sort out amongst ourselves, and if not, you know, with our friends.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, with the contrast there, mm-hmm. going to an all boys school, did you notice it difficult for you in later years to like interact with positively with girls?
Yeah.
Or?
So like, I couldn't talk to a girl until like 18 or 19. Like properly. Like I couldn't. I don't think I could string a conversation for longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
like as in school, you'd obviously have like how would you say a certain all girls school that you'd kind of do work together with. Like mm-hmm. we did a transition year play, and
yeah,
like I think I had like short term girlfriends in like when I was 14 and sorry, 13 or 14, 15, and I like. I look back at it now and go, Jesus, how did they last that long with me? Yeah, yeah. It was only about 6 weeks. So, yeah. But I just found it really difficult. And like in secondary school, I chose to do home economics for my leaving cert, which is like the SATs.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And but I was afraid to tell anyone that I wanted to do it because it's not associated as being very masculine.
Because
it's about cooking, it's about...
being a host, was it about like being a host to people as well?
Essentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, same thing. I played rugby for 9 years, but I don't think I really enjoyed playing it. But I played it just because it was a man thing to do.
Oh, okay.
Turned out I was quite decent at it. But
what position did you play?
I was prop.
You're a prop.
Yeah. I was a lot bigger then.
I'm not even going to pretend to know what that is.
Yeah, it's a position rugby. But it's... I was lucky that I had an older brother and an older sister. So my sister would be 13 years older than me, and my brother was 11 years older than me.
Oh, okay.
So
you had some examples.
I had a bit more guidance. Like, my sister, like... she'd nearly be like a second mother to me because by the time I was 4 or 5, she was 17, 18, 19. So it was just really good for me, able to help with me growing up a little bit better than some all boys schools.
Yeah.
Guys that I knew that were like, even nowadays, I see people I went to school with, and I'm like, how are they still getting
along? Yeah.
Yeah. It's strange.
So did you have a similar experience with siblings?
No, I've got no siblings.
No siblings.
So,
okay.
You couldn't find any more contrasting people.
Right? Yeah, literally. I grew up as an only child.
Were you North Dublin as well? So
I am South Dublin. My dad is from North Side Dublin, so I do have a little bit of...
Okay, gotcha.
Neither of my parents are from Dublin, actually, but I grew up in South Dublin and grew up especially in that area. Of all that kind of talk of guys going to school, play rugby, you know, think they're, you know, they're very bright. Some of them can be very bright and stuff like that, and would have that egotistical about themselves. But yeah, I had no siblings growing up. I had to learn more or less everything by my own or through friends of making mistakes and doing that stuff. And, you know, having that idea or having that, you know, with guys and girls all the way, I think since the age of 4, every class I went through, all the different years, it was always guys and girls.
Okay.
And then I think my first relationship when I was around 15, it lasted for over a year, actually.
Wow.
So that was a lot longer, and it was just different.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, maybe.
That contrast between
there. It's a difference in, and all boys and mixed boys and girls in Dara's region is not common.
Mm.
Well, back then it wouldn't be common.
It's getting common more. Yeah.
Okay.
But back then, you just, like,
no,
you just wouldn't. I only knew of 2 or 3.
Interesting.
And they were actually Protestant schools.
They were. Yeah. Yeah.
They weren't Catholic, because Catholic was very, very strict. Down the line kind of school.
Well, I mean, if contraception only came about in the mid-90s, I can that makes sense.
Catholic Church essentially ran Ireland for so many years that it's only that's why
mm-hmm.
we didn't progress, well, in my opinion, why we didn't progress as quick as we should have.
Definitely.
Such a heavily influenced from the church. Let's not get into religion.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, we don't talk about religion on this podcast.
Or politics.
Thank you.
All right, so we're kind of getting to a place where we can wrap up, I think, with some of this stuff. But we Paul's brought us another beer.
As he should.
As he should.
Good barman.
We are in Ireland after all, right? So Paul's brought us another beer, and this is their Nitro Stout.
Yes.
Right? That you were talking about earlier.
Yep.
What's it called?
Jet Black Heart.
Jet Black Heart. Yeah. That sounds like my spirit beer.
So. Yeah, same.
So, well, Sláinte.
Sláinte.
Or Sláinte Vá for Scotch Gaelic.
Sláinte Vá. Oh man,
better than Guinness.
Yeah, it's so creamy.
Yeah, I got that lovely mustache going.
Yeah, I got that little beer mustache.
Yeah,
it's super creamy. It tastes like a milkshake, really.
Okay,
it's great.
Interesting. I'm getting milkshake.
I want to know where you're getting your milkshake.
I want to drink his milkshake. Yeah.
It's actually a thing in the United States now. Places, what? Like ice cream places, make boozy milkshakes.
We have it on our menu.
Yeah,
we do. We had a shot of bourbon to
okay.
And cookie.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
or vodka to vanilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first place I've ever saw it though in Ireland though that does.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else
does. Any rockers don't do it, no?
No. Yeah, not a very traditional places here in Ireland, I've noticed.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Absolutely.
It's okay though. I like it. That's the experience I was looking for, so it's good.
Good.
But yeah, so anything, do you guys have anything else to kind of wrap up, like how growing up in a more traditional state like Ireland has impacted your masculinity? Like, what does it mean to be a man for you guys, you know?
Since I grew up with a mixed school, just a man is just a human being, you know? I didn't grow up with that. Like, I had no other siblings, so I didn't have to take care of the house and stuff like that. My dad comes from a farming background in that sense, and my mom comes from the north of Ireland, where all hell broke loose up there in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. So they wanted to more or less kind of create a safer spot for me in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did a good job, I think.
That's great.
You know?
So you were talking a little bit about how your dad grew up.
Yeah, and my mom.
So how's it different from, I mean, it's pretty high, big contrast.
Oh, yeah. So my dad grew up... He's from Laois, which is a county right in the middle of Ireland, definitely from farming and stuff like that. That's their main job industry there. And he started working around 8, like as young as 10 years old or 12 years old. And he was cutting turf, which was one of the main products that you use for a fire, by far, instead of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And he would work on the bog for, I don't know how many hours, longer hours on the summertime and short hours during the winter. And he would cut turf for 8 hours or whatever. Ooh. And he would have to cycle as long as 5 or 7 miles, he'd do his shift and go all the way back. And whatever money he made, he would spend that on buying milk, eggs, and bread for the household. And so that's what he did. And my first proper job was, I worked on a farm, my dad's cousin's farm, scraping rust off a silage tank. And that was lovely, getting rust and iron into my mouth and eyes.
Yeah. That sounds phenomenal.
But then my actual first proper job was actually working in a factory, packaging liqueur for the American market.
Okay.
And I was 16 years old. And he really taught me what hard work meant. You know, I did work, did chores and for money and stuff like that, but he really taught me what hard work meant. And I'm really happy he did, actually.
Yeah, that's great.
And then my mother just grew up just to survive in that sense. You know, wherever she could and stuff like that. And that was a whole different experience up there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Paul?
So my father's from Northside Dublin. Got into the bag trade at 17 and basically worked there for 45 years. But he would have come from a proper working class family in an area called Clanbrassil Street. Both his parents worked. His father worked in the GPO for, I think, saying like 44 years or something like that. And that's our general post office.
Okay.
Gotcha. Probably like only the main, like the center of it all.
Okay.
And then his mother worked in Trinity College and as the lunch lady. So,
all right.
She also worked in Cadbury's factory, which is
chocolate brand. Eggs, yeah.
So, and then my mother is completely different. She's from Donegal, which is nearly as north as you can go in Ireland. Like properly rural. She didn't speak English till she was 11.
Oh wow!
Spoke just Gaelic.
Just Gaelic. Wow, that's cool. Gaelic.
But she grew up quite poor. They were on a farm, but they're on a farm that the land wasn't great at all. She left when she met my father, I think, when she was 18. Yeah, okay. She ended up working in the bank across the road from where she used to work.
So. Yeah.
So she would have come from a hard enough background. So I'd learn hard grafting off her, and then I get my good business sense off like that.
Nice.
So when I buy my first house, I'm making sure it's the best mortgage I can possibly
get. Right. Yeah. There you go. That's cool.
But I think with my mother's presence with me, it's made me find more kind of less, you make me less toxic masculine, if that makes sense.
Yeah. A little bit softer, a little bit more understanding.
I love cooking. And I learned cooking off her. she would definitely kind of help me not be one of these
macho
frat boys, for lack of a better term.
yeah, that's cool.
So, and then obviously, like I said earlier on, my sister, she would be a bit older than me, so she also helped me kind of not turn into one of these toxic masculine guys from South County Dublin.
Yeah.
Years of rugby and being a jock.
Gotcha. Okay. That's interesting. Dara, earlier you were talking a little bit about drinking in Ireland and how it kind of relates to your masculinity and that sort of thing. So can you talk a little bit more about that, because I think that's a really interesting thing to hear, because I mean, there's certain things in the US as well. It's like you're kind of looked down upon if you drink certain things, right? So what's your experience here in Ireland?
My experience is drinking in Ireland, male or female, is more or less a common thing. It's in a sense a part of our culture, you know, mm-hmm. with the history of Guinness, which is over 250 years old as a brand. And when you think of Irish, you always think of drink. You always think of Guinness. You know, when I ask people, oh, where do you think Heineken's
Guinness
from?
Guinness and Jameson, yeah.
Guinness and Jameson. And then when you ask people, where do you think Heineken's from? And they have got no clue.
Yeah.
They have got no clue. So it's got a huge impact on as we are as a society in Ireland. I think we have taken a step back, especially in the recent years, with craft beer in that sense, where people are not as drinking as much, but might be having two or three drinks.
Okay.
A couple times a week.
Yeah.
With the stronger kind of beers or lighter beers, or just the flavor of beers in general. Mm. And people are not just getting drunk, you know, every Friday or Saturday night. And
yeah.
Growing up I remember being 13, 14, 15, going into my 15th, and I was like, I was convincing myself I didn't want to start drinking until I was 18, because I just didn't want to, I wanted to be like, I don't know where I got the idea, I just didn't want to drink until I was 18. And then I was on holidays at 15, and just went with a, in Spain, and I was over with my parents, and they were like, oh, you can bring a friend, whatever. So I brought one of my buddies with me, and we would go out for dinner with my parents, and then they would go walk the promenade or whatever, and then we were like, okay, you go to the arcade, or you guys go to... So we're like, yeah, cool. So the first couple of nights, we went to the arcade, and just played games, and then we just meet up with them, go home, and then after a while, we're kind of like, okay, we've got a solid 2 hours here where we're with no parental guidance, which is irresponsible. My parents passed, but I think they kind of trust me enough. Well, they thought they could trust me enough not to do anything stupid. But I remember just walking, finding the strip in Marbella where like there's just a strip of bars.
Yeah.
And we were walking down, and just some guy working in a bar came over to us and said, "Hey guys, come on in here for two shots. You get two beers and you get two free shots." Like, they were coming to us saying, like, we weren't trying to get in, sneaking in, trying to get a beer. This guy physically came over to two 15-year-old guys saying some stupid.
Was that Barcelona?
No, it was Malaga.
Okay.
And then the very southern of Spain. So gotcha. That's when I just like drank then. And I was like, I was getting drunk and I was like, this is fun. so stupid for a 15-year-old kid to think this. And then I got home and just ended up like...
Did your parents find out?
I think they knew, but I think they kind of saw that I was handling myself okay.
Yeah.
I presume. I don't know. Maybe they were just completely blind to the fact that I was...
They had a side conversation. They were like, should we be worried about Paul?
Drunk. I was enjoying it. I was just, you're merry. Yeah. Merry. That's but I remember growing up then when I was 16, 17, 18. It's like, if you didn't drink beer, you'd be like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially in an all boys school, it's like, you gotta drink beer. You gotta have beer. And then, like, if you're gonna have anything other than beer, it was basically just to get drunk. So, like, the average, I'd say, the main thing you got was a six pack of beer and a Nagin of vodka, which is a 250 ml bottle of vodka.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's your
25 cl. Yeah.
That's what that, and that was like your Friday night
go to.
Gotcha.
But then as years went on, like I remember getting into a little bit more craft beer between Sierra Nevada, and it was still always just like just drink beer.
It sounds like somebody's playing the glasses. But Sierra Nevada and Fat Tire were actually the first two craft beers that I ever heard about.
Okay, cool.
There was a New Belgium flat tire. Mm-hmm. Those were the first two that I ever heard of outside of Budweiser, Coors, and growing up in South Texas, we had one called Shinerbach.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, and so those were kind of like the normal beers for that area. Mm. They kind of started popping out, when I was in my early 20s, a lot more.
And then, like, recent time now, like, the gin and tonic phase here is, massive. And I love a gin and tonic.
Really? I don't know. I just don't like gin.
I'd say about 10 years ago, if you were a guy and you asked for a gin and tonic, they'd look at you like, really? A gin and tonic? Yeah. But now, like, it's
common.
We, like, on Friday night, just gone, we sold about 145 gin and tonics.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Because
You guys sell liquor here as well.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You have a distillery for...
So BrewDog had their own distillery as well, where we distill our own gin, vodka. We just recently brought out 500 Cuts, which is our botanical rum.
Cool.
So it's like actually Christmas.
Yeah.
Nice. That sounds good.
And they've also just brought out a spirit called... Again, I'm going to butcher the name. It's called Yanchu. It's Chinese. It was a spirit that was originally made in China.
Okay.
It's a bit, I suppose it's supposed to be a little bit like sake, but not quite. But it's we've just brought out our own one of those. I haven't got a chance to try it yet. But.
Cool. And then we also have our own cider as well.
Yeah.
Hawk. So we got like an Urban Orchard was an apple cider, and then Dead and Berries, obviously berries and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We also have True Roots, which is ginger beer as well.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, my first ever drinks was always cider, and Paul said earlier on was Bomers, which is the massive one in Ireland. That was apple cider. And
one that's like syrup almost. It's like
it's just sickly sweet. And but again, since he went to an old boys school and I went to a mixed school, I wasn't frowned upon from drinking cider.
Oh, okay.
In my class, how big was your class?
About 25, 26 people.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, mine four classes.
Though. Oh, four classes. So, but in your year. So
in my year, about 130, 140.
In my year, was only less than 20, which was very small amongst any other schools in that area.
Okay.
And so we had that combination of like nine guys, nine girls. And
wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, it does.
I had 650 in my graduating class.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. So we're literally going just as small.
Texas.
It was accepted for me to drink cider when we started off. And then as I progressed on and started drinking beer, and I didn't have the taste for beer. I had the taste for what the effect it had on me.
Yeah.
And then when I started drinking craft beer, I was like, I can actually drink this and enjoy it instead of just for the pure effect.
And
just have one or two and I'm like, I'm done. I don't need no more. Just have a lovely time.
Yeah, that's great. And that's like, I don't know if it's like a thing of adulthood or if it's a thing of like learning like what craft beer actually is, what wine actually is, that sort of thing, liquor. and learning how to enjoy it versus like how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
I don't know which of those it is, but I think there's definitely a kind of like a coming of age thing there where it's like we learn to appreciate the flavor rather than the effect, like you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has been really good, guys. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you joining me today.
No, yeah, definitely.
I've got 28 more beers.
28, yeah, okay, all right. Well, I'm in for it.
I unfortunately have to go to work.
But I'm off today.
There you go, yep. So, yeah, I think Dar and I are going to head over to
Urban Brewing. And then I actually want to bring you to a good place that I used to drink Guinness at. Okay. Not hating on Jet Black Heart. I still love Jet Black Heart. I'm drinking it, obviously. But a good place for a good Guinness.
Dar's got a history with Guinness, so...
Yeah, that's why I might have a soft spot. Yeah, that's okay. Look, it's everyone to their own.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys. And we'll talk soon, yeah?
Yeah, sweet. Definitely. Awesome.
Sweet.